This is Alan Parker's Christmas special.
On your side and in your ear. Cheers.
Alan says.
What have we got? What have we got? Nothing. When do we want it? Now.
Throat.
Normal service will be resumed.
Not be resumed.
The revolution will not be televised.
It's on the radio.
Throat. Cheers, this is Alan Parker, Urban Warrior, speaking to you. Now, a month ago, some bloke from Radio 1 said to me, Alan, Christmas special? And I said, no, it isn't, it's just a day like any other. And he explained what he meant, obviously, and so here I am. But I still agree with myself on my original point. I mean, Christmas is a time for caring and sharing and people coming together, you know, like the rest of the year, in fact. So I don't say Happy Christmas, I say Happy 25th of December. And as for Boxing Day, well, it's time the boxing stopped. We shouldn't be hitting each other. We should be stroking each other. So it's a Happy Stroking Day. Cheers. Anyway, here is my Christmas single. Yeah, it's called Christmas Single. And it's not available in any shops or anywhere else for that matter. It's not available, basically, but here it is.
It's Christmas and I'm single again. Geese are getting fat, they mean we gotta kill them.
It's Christmas
and I want everyone to unite. But why does no one want to unite with me?
It's Christmas.
There was a house in Walthamstow, had fairy lights in the window, looked inviting and friendly. But when I knocked on the door, they said they didn't want me stinking out the place.
It's Christmas.
I said, what if I was baby Jesus? They said you're not, and tried to shut the door. I said, how can you be so sure? They said if you were baby Jesus, you'd have some ID and you'd be wearing a nappy.
It's Christmas.
So I watched through the window as they ate their tea. They all seemed so united, but not with me. And I thought to myself, Jesus died for our sins. Must this turkey die for their deeds? Jesus was nailed to a cross, so must this turkey get stuck? Well, and Jesus came back from the dead. I hope the turkey comes back to them in the form of indigestion. Hope you choke on it.
Cheers. Now, over the next hour, I shall be drinking 6 cans of lager, starting now. Go. And there'll be an interview with a struggling band that you've never heard of and some other stuff and that. And I'll be taking some important complex issues and hitting them with a sledgehammer. My mind, in other words. Right. Now, the Criminal Justice Bill. Now, when I first heard about it, I thought, oh no, not another bill. Who's going to pay that then? You know, but then I found out that basically it is an attempt to stop raves by making repetitive music illegal. Now, I have never particularly liked repetitive music. I find it repetitive. But if the government want to ban something, then I am in favour of it. Simple as that. I mean, if they don't like repetitive music, then that is what I'm going to play. The most repetitive music I can find. So put some earplugs in and listen to this. And I hope you're listening, John Major. Everyone else, I'm sorry. Not only that, but I am going to be playing the same piece of repetitive music throughout the programme. I.e. repeating the repetitive music. That's double repetition, technically. Anyway, and I'm going to continue to play it until John Major agrees to scrap the Criminal Justice Bill. Now, I know what you're thinking, you know, how long can this go on? Well, I'll say courage, you know. Bear with us, Summers. Come on, John Major. Well, I'll play the Rat Poison remix, and believe me, you wouldn't want that. It's awful. But how do I know? How do I know that Major's even listening to 1FM? Oh, you know, after all, no one else does. Well, he's listening tonight, I can assure you. I made sure. Even as we speak, four highly trained rave commandos are assaulting 10 Downing Street with ghetto blasters tuned to 1FM and pumping at full volume, bathing the air in sound. I'm going to speak to someone on the ground now, find out how it's going. Hello? Hello?
Respect, mate. Respect. PJ in the area buzzing.
That PJ, is that you? Where are you?
I'm in a phone box, man.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, but near Downing Street.
Red phone box, man. It's just red, yeah.
Red. Right, doesn't matter. How's it going? What's happening?
Yeah, man. It's all right. Everything's safe.
But what's happening? The assault Downing Street. Yeah.
Ali and Darren, they're still going for it.
Heroes.
Jimmy's
heroes.
Gone.
Jimmy's gone.
Yeah, man.
Is he all right? What's happened? Did
he hurt? He's gone, man.
Are they taken away or what?
Taxi.
Police.
Taxi.
Yeah,
he just jumped in the cab. I don't know where he's gone, actually. He's just wanted to change the scene, that's all.
He just left?
Yeah, man.
Treachery. He's a traitor.
No, man. He's not a traitor. Don't say that, man. He's not a traitor, man. There's no such thing as betrayal. If there's trust, and the trust with me and Jimmy's massive.
Forget it, PJ.
Man,
doesn't matter.
Massive.
Forget Jimmy. The assault goes on. That's the main thing, yeah?
Yeah, man. Yeah, we forgot the batteries.
You what? You what?
The batteries, mate. Something's gone with them. I don't know, mate.
So there's no sound coming out of your Gower Blasters?
Not as such, mate. There's a sound of silence. That's what there is.
So PJ, it's pointless me playing this bloody music if you're not playing it there.
Bandish yourself,
that's the whole
man.
Idea.
It's not pointless, man. Get yourself up. Do you know what I mean? It's not pointless, man.
It's pointless. John Major can't hear it, can he?
Well,
if you've not got the batteries.
Maybe Major doesn't want to hear it. Do you know what I'm saying? Maybe Major hasn't got ears to hear.
He's
got
ears. It's just you're not playing it.
Yeah, but as Major... ears. Do you know what I'm saying, mate? The ears of Major, man.
He's got ears.
Do you know what I mean? What are they hearing?
PJ,
ears.
PJ, get some batteries, right?
Living large, mate. Living large.
Right, get some batteries and ring us back later. Still, relief in a way. I don't have to play any more of that. He's blur. Blur there. London loves the mystery of a speeding car. That's a great line, you know. But what is the mystery of a speeding car? Well, it's how come you never see one in central London? The answer is traffic congestion, basically. Cars go about 12 miles an hour on average in London. Cabs go even slower than that. Now, I know a lot of people slag off cabbies, but I support them because they're ordinary, decent members of the urban proletariat. And there's a reason they drive so slowly. It's because either they're hoping to pick up a fare or they're trying to finish telling you the story, and, you know, that can take time. Still, great song there from Blur. I like Blur because they're really London, urban. And like, even the name, Blur, it's got that gritty, urban feel, like Blur. You know, it sounds like someone being sick in a gutter. Anyway, here's The Clash. Garage Land. I love this. And you should too. Back in the garage with my bush. Brilliant. Anyway, I was thinking at this stage of doing an interview with a struggling but unknown band. Like, give them some publicity, help them on their way in that. And I was trying to think of, like, which band were, like, struggling the most. And it came to me, my band, Truth. So I decided to go and interview myself. Now, I know what you're thinking. How can you interview yourself? You'll know all the questions. It's like cheating. Well, what I did was, before I went, I wrote down some really tough, searching questions. And when I got there at home, I got really pissed so that I'd forget the questions and they'd come as a surprise. Here's my interview.
Alan Parker interviews Alan Parker.
Right. Question. What are your musical influences? Right. Well, music generally, and Sham 69 as well, of course. Next question, please. Right. What was it like in the band? Well, I don't know, memories. I remember the good gigs. I remember the bad gigs. In fact,
I can remember all three gigs that we did. Second one was really odd. It was at Heaven, like the gay disco in London. I think we were booked by mistake. Really. It didn't go very well, particularly. After gig, though, we did have a big gay following for a while. He wanted his money back, but we shook him off at Euston Road, so it was all right in the end, you know. Right, next question. What was the best moment in the band? Well, for me, personally speaking, as myself, the highlight was when we were in Birmingham and we finished recording our first six songs, which I dedicated to the Birmingham Six, naturally, because we were in Birmingham and there were six of them, you know, like the Birmingham Six. Only the Birmingham Six got released, of course. That's the difference. Yeah. Cheers. Well, sometimes I get a bit bored listening to the sound of my own voice. Not often. But anyway, let's have the voice of someone else. Now, here is now some radical self-defence ideas from a bloke, I don't know his name, he wouldn't tell me, that I found hiding in my room about 2 weeks ago.
A quiet street. Or is it? It seems peaceful enough, you feel safe. But are you? No, you're not! On the street, attack can come at any time, from any direction, from anyone. That man on the corner who smiled at you, why did he smile? And what did he mean by it? Those three old ladies with their brightly colored shopping trolleys, what danger do they pose? Sure, they're old, but there's three of them. And if they've got trolleys, you can bet they know how to use them in a street combat situation. And those two youths that kicked you to the ground and stole your wallet. Youthful exuberance? Or had they some more sinister purpose? Oh yes, attack can come from any direction, suddenly, without warning. But more often than not, there is a warning. And by recognizing these warnings, you can buy yourself a few vital seconds to prepare. For example, if someone says to you the following,
"Oi, what are you doing? You keep your hand out of my pocket or I'll smack you."
Then this person poses a considerable threat to you. An attack is probably imminent. A considerable threat, but a calculable one. You are likely to receive several punches to the head and torso. Surely then it might have been better not to put your hand in their pocket in the first place. Ah. But how much worse it would have been if you hadn't searched his pockets and he had a knife or gun. Yes, you're likely to end up in hospital, but better there than in the morgue. And in hospital, at least you're safe. There's only the doctors and nurses and other patients to worry about. Some people say attack is the best form of defense. Not in my experience, not in a crowded street anyway. Certainly it would enable you to disable the first potential assailant you meet. But after that, the element of surprise is lost and you often find yourself outnumbered. Statistics show that most violent assault is committed by someone known to the victim. So if someone you know approaches you, do the sensible thing. Run away! Of course, a certain amount of danger is inevitable on the streets. You cannot wrap yourself in cotton wool. Or rather, you can. But you leave yourself wide open to any assailant with a box of matches. It's raining. You leave your house and put up an umbrella. Don't! It could be the last thing you ever do. An umbrella blocks your vertical vision space. Cut a hole in it and give yourself a few extra seconds in the event of an attack from the sky. Thought and preparation are the best methods of defense. For example, the average mugger wants to steal your money. If he knows you have none, he'll not bother you. How can you convey to passers-by that you have nothing? Nudity is the answer. Of course, some people find nudity offensive and may attack you on those grounds. But I find if you smear yourself with feces, these people are also deterred. Certainly, you will endure verbal abuse and be asked to leave some shops, but that's a small price to pay for physical safety.
Sorry about this.
Holy night.
But I've just been told, someone in authority, that I have to play some carols, right? I refused, obviously. Then they persuaded me with some like sophisticated arguments about non-payment, basically. Of course, they didn't say which version of the carol I had to play. Ha! The Dickies. Cheers. Cheers, that's the Dickies there with their brilliant version of Silent Night. And that was Cliff Richard before, you know. Now, Cliff Richard, he's had a lot of number ones, all of which sound a bit like number twos to me. Clever wording. See, number twos, poos. Right, anyway, I got Sandra Phillips, who's a sort of radical intellectual feminist woman who I met in the pub where I go to. And I got her to analyse some Cliff Richard lyrics to see what they really mean. Now, here's her report.
Cliff Richard. I'm Sandra Phillips. Cliff Richard. What is his meaning? Cliff, a boy's name. Richard, another boy's name. Two boys' names. What is he saying to us? That he's doubly a boy? That he's very male? Is this the behaviour of someone at ease with their sexuality? Is this the key to understanding the songs of Cliff Richard?
Faces aglow, it's Christmas time. Mistletoe and wine.
Mistletoe and wine. Yes, we know what he's saying here. A sprig of mistletoe, a few glasses of wine. Cliff is alluding to the dark and powerful forces of sexuality, a subject on which his views are very well known.
She's just a devil woman.
No, Cliff, they're not devils out to steal your manhood with a pair of scissors and a cheeky grin. Not anymore. You need not be afraid. We're not devils. We're not dolls.
Lock her up in a trunk.
Put her in a trunk. Cliff Richard and Jeffrey Dahmer. A very thin line.
Yeah. Good point, Sandra. But it's true, men do have a deep-rooted ancient terror of women's private sexual apparatus. And that fear, put simply, is that it, you know, it might have teeth. You know, try and take a nip at you. Like most fears, comes from ignorance. I mean, I find you don't get to see women's sexual apparatus very often. And then it's normally from a distance, like over a hedge or through binoculars or something. This is the Stone Roses, but we're coming up to the news now. So what I'm going to do is play a bit of Slade. So making it a good time to go and make a cup of tea. Now, turn the radio off, make a cup of tea. See you in about 5 minutes.
Alan P. Urban W.
I have a dream. In fact, I have loads of dreams. And I have those dreams by any means necessary. And you can too. Just eat loads of cheese before you go to bed. That's the best way.
Truth, truth.
London, England.
Truth, truth.
Cheers, that was the news, or the lies, as I call it. But you're back now with the truth.
Watching the detectives. Watching the detectives.
Elvis Costello there, pointing out that we should be watching the detectives. Yeah, the police corruption issue. Now, some people say it's just like a case of a few bad apples. I mean, and maybe that is how it was in the old days. But now there's often money involved as well. It's not just bits of rotten fruit changing hands. Now I'm going to have a bit more from that interview that I did with myself. In this part of it, I talk frankly about the difficulties faced in the complex relationships between the different band members.
Alan Parker interviews Alan Parker.
Yeah. I mean, one of the problems with the band is that Andy, bass player, Stu and Al, basically, at the end of the day, are twats, just like idiots. some of the problems. I mean, you know, don't listen properly and that. It's you know, a band's a democracy. I said to him, a band's a democracy. That, you know, that means people, you've got to do what you're told, basically. And, you know, but I go on to them, tell them what should be done and that, and talk for ages and ages. They just don't listen. It's like talking to yourself sometimes. It's just pointless. And like Andy, he's all right. He's all right, you know, but he's... I mean, he likes the Beatles, you know. I mean, like, yeah, everyone likes the Beatles, but, I mean, he really likes the Beatles. I mean, they're like, you know, one of his favourite bands. So he doesn't just, like them, pretend to like them when he's, like, talking to a girl to impress her like a normal bloke. I mean, he really likes them. And there's something also about him, like, worse than that, it's just like, something a little bit, you know, just a little bit Paul McCartney-ish. You know, like Paul McCartney, like, all right, you know, hello, say hello to him in a pub, but, you know, you wouldn't trust him in a tank, that's what I'm saying, really. Like Paul McCartney, you wouldn't trust him in a tank, no, like in a push-comes-to-shove real-life situation, you know, like when, you know, the Panzers are rolling down Shaftesbury Avenue once more, and you are all that stands between the death of democracy and Holborn Tube. You know, and you're there, you're right there with your, you know, willing to cop a napalm sandwich in the mouth, if that's what it takes to give those people trying to get on the Northern Line a few extra seconds. And you're there, right, and say you had the choice of one of the Beatles, one member of the Beatles to, like, help you load your bazooka or something. I'm just saying, you know, that choice, it wouldn't be Paul McCartney, would it? You know, I mean, you know, not Paul McCartney, but it'd be you know, it'd be John Lennon or even, you know, George Harrison or, you know, or maybe even like Ringo as a last resort, but not Paul McCartney. He's just not tank material. He came to Ed, me and it was just, you know, he was going on and on again and again, as he always does, about chords and bass lines and rhythm structures and tunes. And I just said, I lost my bot. I said, Andy, shut it. Andy, shut it, right? This is how it is. I shout, you strum in the gaps. That's how it is. It's as simple as that. There's no need to overcomplicate things. And, you know, he went off then. He just lost his temper and went off, said, I've had enough, left the band. And we carried on. We carried on without him. And it was all right for a while, you know. You know, just Stu there on guitar and now drumming and that. And Stu was strumming away really hard. And then, yeah, oh, God, I remember what happened. It was, you know, Stu, he was strumming so hard that one of the strings broke really suddenly. So he left the band. And then it was, you know, just me and Al. And we carried on for another couple of hours, just like, I was shouting away and he was drumming. I thought, yeah, we don't need that musical bits. We just need this. And then Al, and this really depressed me, Al just turns to me and says, I don't want to be in the band anymore. I've had enough. And I looked at him, I couldn't believe it. I said, Al, look, I know you. You're not a quitter, mate. I mean, you're stupid, but you're a good bloke at heart. But, you know, if you didn't want to be here, you'd have walked out that door ages ago when the rest of them left, you know. And the fact that you're still sitting here tells me that deep in your heart, you still want to be in this band. And Al says, you know, no, I don't want to be in the band. I said, well, then get out, just walk out that door. And I started to walk, but I knew he wouldn't do it. And he turned at the last moment and came back in. And I said, yeah, Al, yeah. And he went, no, I don't want to be in the band. I said, why don't you go? And he explained, like, because it was his room. And, like, if he walked out, he'd just have to come back in again in a few minutes, but he had enough of the band. He didn't want to be in it, and he didn't want to leave himself. He wanted me to leave, you know, go out the door, and I did that. I went out that door, you know. I left because you know, I just had enough by then.
Right, Christmas is a time when people of all religions come together to celebrate the birth of Jesus. But what is religion? I mean, is there a God really, or is he just like another urban myth? Well, on that question, I think I speak for most people in this country when I say, I don't know. And how do I know I speak for most people in this country? I ask them.
What does God mean to you?
Man with the long grey beard, sort of long, fluffy grey hair. It's very kind.
Gosh, power.
How I feel when it's a full moon. It's a sort of force. It sort of, it's like a blue flash, sort of.
Well, okay, I asked three of them, and that's not most people in the country, but it's a start. Now, in fact, I happen to know quite a lot about the Bible, and I can really relate to Jesus, who's like the central character. I mean, he reminds me of myself in many ways. I mean, like, for example, like, he had 11 disciples, which I'll have if I get another 9 or so. And he was a carpenter, like one of the workers, which is what I aspire to be. And okay, yeah, he got crucified, and that has never happened to me. But I've done gigs in Preston, which isn't far off. But how do I know about the Bible? Well, it happened like this. I was knocking door to door in this block of flats, trying to like stir up revolutionary fervour and that, and also record the voices of the people, which is a thankless task, I tell you. I mean, you know, no one thanked me. Quite the opposite, in fact, generally. Anyway, I was doing that, and this happened.
Hello.
Can we help you?
Yeah, I'm, don't hit me. I'm Alan Parker. I just wanted to like, talk to you about revolution. And I'm just recording like the voices of the people and not trying to get everyone uniting that. I'll go if you...
No, come in.
What?
Come in.
Right.
Come
oh, yeah,
in.
Cheers.
Do come
don't normally
through.
Get this far. Yeah.
Do let us show you the way.
Right, okay.
Sit down.
What, on the chair? Cheers. Oh,
can I get you a drink?
Can of lager.
Oh, a lovely nice. Cup of tea.
Yeah, that'll do.
So,
we talked about revolution,
what are
basically,
you called? What are you called?
Alan Parker.
Alan, excellent.
Warrior.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Barbara.
Right,
and
yeah.
we're your friends.
That's good. We've all got to be friends. We've all got to unite. That's what I'm
so,
trying to say.
So, have you read the book?
No, well, I don't read
no.
books. They're too
no.
like bourgeois,
no.
fascist, middle class.
Then we'll read it to you then.
Cheers.
Hold him, Barbara.
Hold me. What? You get off. What are you doing? I
didn't hush, wanna... Alan.
No.
Hush.
And whoever welcomes a little child like this in my name welcomes me.
Repent, Alan.
Yeah.
Anyone caught in one of
yeah.
these little
ones? It turned out they were Jehovah's Witnesses who were behind on their quota. And basically they tied me up and read the whole of the Bible to me. And even though I didn't like agree with what they were saying, I had to admire their methods. You know, on the other hand, though, maybe, you know, it's wrong to go around trying to force your views on people. Not unless, of course, your views are right, you know, in which case it's okay. Anyway, it got me thinking about religion. And I thought what we need these days is a new religion.
A new religion.
Yeah, as Alana Miles suggests there, though, I don't think it should be based on a particular cloth like velvet or anything. But what I thought we could do is, like, have a new religion using little bits of all the other old religions. You know, just little bits, like sampling. Now, say, for example, like churches, they're not very well attended these days. So maybe we could have our religion in a different venue.
We're going to the pub.
That's right, the pub. Yeah, that's right, the pub. So it's no problem getting people into the pub, it's just it's getting them out. 11:30's a problem normally. Anyway, so that could be a hymn as well, like for our religion. And here's another one, Our Voodoo by Monty. I love this, it's brilliant. Right, and another thing, like religious-wise, the Catholics, see, they got this thing where you get free bread and wine, and we could have that as well in our religion, only not bother about the bread, maybe. Maybe add fags as well. And instead of a priest, right, we could have whoever was most pissed in the pub, and they could like walk round doing a sort of sermon by shouting whatever came into their heads. It's not that different from what happens naturally anyway. And you could do like pub weddings, you know, like, I pronounce you bird and fella, you may swap phone numbers or something. And the Muslims, they got this thing where you must not drink or smoke or take drugs. And we could take that and use that, but by reversing it. And Some religions have this thing where the women have to wear veils, right? And we could have that, but not women. Ugly people, maybe. Maybe just Phil Collins and a really tight veil, so it was like a gag and all. But what about God? Where does he fit into our pub-based religion? But we don't know if he exists or not, do we? Right, so instead of a cross, the symbol of our religion would be a big question mark to express that uncertainty. And you wouldn't bow down to and pray to it, obviously. You just sort of give it a nod occasionally, like it was someone you knew but, like, didn't want to talk to. This is brilliant, though. It's just like a soundtrack to a film that was never made in the 60s. Oh, Voodoo by Monty. Now, another potential hymn for a pub-based religion. Sunday morning, Velvet Underground.
Sunday morning brings the dawn in. It's just a restless feeling by my side. Dawning Sunday morning, it's just the wasted years so close behind. Watch out, the world's behind you. There's always someone around you who will call. It's nothing at all. Sunday morning, and I'm falling. I've got a feeling I don't want to know. Early dawning, Sunday morning, it's all the streets you cross. Not so long ago. Watch out, the world's behind you. There's always someone around you who will come. It's nothing at all.
Sunday Morning by the Velvet Underground there. Great song. And that song inspired me to write a sort of hymn myself, a sort of modern dancey hymn. Since the band split up, I was forced into that avenue. Anyway, it's called Sunday Evening, and it's the B-side to my Christmas single. I say B-side, but in fact, both songs are equally good in my mind, so I think of it more as like a double B-side. Anyway, here it is.
Sunday Evening, and it's time to decide if you're gonna have an early night or go out to the pub once more. Yeah, it's decision time.
Are you having a fart or are you having a laugh? Are you having a fart or are you having a laugh? Soap and water or 6 months of lager, the choice is yours. Are you having a fart or are you having a laugh? Are you having a fart or are you having a laugh?
Are you having a scrub or are you going to the pub? Is it splush, splush, splush or ha, ha, ha? Are you having a scrub or are you going to the pub? Some people like to wash and go, so do I. Only I'm not that bothered about the washing. I just wanna go, 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 go!
Go! Are you having a pub or are you having a laugh? Choice is yours. Are you having a
bath
or are you having a laugh? Are you having a
bath
or are you having a laugh?
But on the other hand, a laugh is an ecstatic moment that lasts just for an instant. Whereas a wash, that'll last 4 days.
Are you having a bath or are you having a laugh?
Cheers. Respects to
Pete
Stefanovic, Peter Bainham, Alad Evans, Mandy Knight, Steve Harris, Paul Tonkinson, Alison Harbert, Martha Knight, Peter Page. This is Alan Parker, Urban Warrior, signing off and saying good night, and don't go back to your old values. And incidentally, unite and fight. You want to, it's a free country. No, it isn't.